having so much fun on a radio show.
Fun within prescribed limits.
Broadcasting live from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios.
The government and parents everywhere, they tried to ban it.
This is the George Plaster Show.
He's a fine man.
He's a great broadcaster.
Brought to you by Bart Durham Injury Law. Call George now at 615-844-5600 and online at WNSR.com.
He's a very powerful guy.
And now, here's the man, the myth, the legend, George Plaster.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome in on what's turned out to be a really nice Wednesday in Nashville. 46 degrees, bright sunshine. Mid-50s tomorrow, so really can't complain a whole lot after the big cold snap that we had yesterday. Let's check in up on the plateau with Coach Watson Brown. Watson, what kind of snow did you all get?
George, we got a pretty dusting. It's on the ground and the trees. It's been really neat today to sit here and watch it melt and kind of nice to see that. I'm not a big snow guy, but I like looking at it, but I don't like dealing with it. So this was one of those you could look at and not have to deal with.
Watson, are you there?
Yeah, you don't have me? Hello?
Okay, he may not be there. He's there now. Watson, you there?
I'm here. Who, did Jay not put me in yet? That's on Jay, right?
You know what?
Or is it on you?
No, I'm gonna rule me out on this one. How about that?
You're pretty good at that.
Yeah, I know it. Let's check in. So, did you all get much snow?
Got a pretty dusting. That's what I was saying, and it was didn't have to deal with anything. Just pretty to look at and watching it melt today. It's a beautiful day up here today. Not a cloud in the sky.
Yeah, good, good. Now, be ready because Terry is on cloud nine. As his Yankees have spent $1.5 billion to sign Garrett Cole. Terry, I know I know communism is spreading, and this is living proof of it.
George, this is capitalism at its finest. $324 million is capitalism.
Do you realize over a 10-year period, 9-year period, whatever it is he signed for, do you realize that if he makes, let's say, 30 to 32 starts a year, that breaks down to something like $1.2 million per start.
Good work if you can get it.
Well, yeah, I mean, gosh. Now, under the category of what has changed for the Yankees, I think it simply comes down to how Steinbrenner was catching a lot of heat in New York, that he's not his dad. You know, he's not willing to go the extra mile the way Daddy did. And all this whole Brian Cashman, we need to do it through the farm system, went out the window.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably has something to do with it. You know, to be honest, this is their first big free agent signing in quite some time. Now, they traded for Giancarlo Stanton last year and, you know, took on his big salary. But as far as just going out on the open market, this is the first time they've gone about this to get a real big name in a few years. I mean, they made an astute signing with DJ LeMahieu, but I don't think that's, you know, at the time that wasn't cause for a big splash or anything like that. And a lot of their players are homegrown. You know, they've got quite a few guys that have played in their farm system, or in the case of like a Gleyber Torres was, you know, acquired while he was still a minor leaguer from the Cubs. So I think, you know, this was a need. They did not have a top of the rotation guy. And I don't think that the Steinbrenner family was going to let this one go. I think they knew that between Cole and Strasburg, the two best pitchers that were out there on the market, that they had to have one of them.
And they got one of them.
Absolutely.
So, Terry, what do you think they do? I mean, they're so far over the luxury tax, it's not even funny. Do you think they try to move Stanton?
I don't know. That's a good question. Because, you know, their lineup is really loaded with a lot of right-handed hitting, which is normally not ideal for Yankee Stadium. traditionally been better for, you know, to have left-handed power hitters. But so it's possible that, you know, they have pretty good, you know, a pretty good set of outfielders when you're talking about guys like Mike Tauchman and Aaron Hicks and Brett Gardner, of course, to go with Aaron Judge. But, you know, you don't know if those guys are going to be, you know, star quality again, you know, and, or they're going to be able to produce consistently like they did this year when called upon. I think it's going to be a situation where if they could move Stanton, you know, it may be hard for somebody to, you know, take on that contract unless they can peddle him to another big market team like the Dodgers or the Angels or somebody like that.
Watson, you want to get into what's going on with baseball in the South, which is where we live?
Good, George.
Do you like that?
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, we are not going to let the Yankees dominate this show. Here is a little bit of a prediction that I have no proof of in any of this. I think the Braves are quietly coming to the realization that the Josh Donaldson sweepstakes is going to get past them. It's going to get to a fourth year, and it's going to get to a level of money they're not comfortable with. My guess is once they know that for sure, they are going to then really jump into a former Cardinal outfielder, Marcell Ozuna, to provide a lot of the power that Donaldson would have provided, and then just basically say, okay, Austin Riley, figure it out at third, and if you simply can't get it done, then Johan Camargo, who is a, you know, really good utility player, might end up playing more third than they would want. That's kind of where I think they're going.
Well, that would make sense to me. But I still wonder why they didn't get in on one of those two pitchers. Explain that to me. Why would you not make a run at one of those two guys?
Oh, I think it's just budgetary. I mean, I think Liberty Media has given them a certain amount of money to work with. I think Alex Anthopoulos, good Greek boy, has done everything he can do under the financial restraints that he's dealing with. And I think he made the decision that they needed to fix the bullpen more than they needed to fix starting pitching, that if push comes to shove, they have got a pipeline of young kids that are close, Kyle Wright from Vandy being one of them, and I think they just took their chances, and we'll see where it goes.
If they thought that they weren't going to be able to get Josh Donaldson back in the fold, why did they move on from Charlie Culbertson, who, if they were going to have to go with Camargo some at third, could have also gotten some at-bats there?
Well, I'll say this. Even though we're both good Greek boys, I don't buy what Anthopoulos has done with Charlie Culbertson. And I'm hoping that there's some pushback and maybe they get back together and get something done. Culbertson was a huge piece of what they've been doing, not only with the clutch hits, but the clubhouse. He's been great for their locker room. Terry, I honestly don't think they thought that they were going to get this much pushback on Donaldson. But I think as Donaldson has checked out the market, I think he's finding that his services are worth more than probably he and the Braves thought. I think that's where it is.
Fair enough.
Now, for what really is going on what at least so far today has been a quiet Wednesday at the winter meetings, we check in with Jack Gentry. Jack, what are the rumors? What's it look like?
Well, to kind of really hammer home just how sinfully expensive the Gerrit Cole deal was, if he were to average 100 pitches per start this year, which would be poor management on the Yankees' end, he will be raking in about $10,000 per pitch. So that really should emphasize just how expensive Gerrit Cole really is. Now, we'll go to Boston Red Sox, the Yankees' rival. They are announcing that they are shopping David Price. David Price is scheduled to make $96 million over the next 3 years. they're looking to free up some cap space. I know they have interest in really keeping Mookie Betts, J.D. Martinez, that whole lineup really together.
As yeah, well good as, luck on that.
As well as bringing in a pitcher to really replace them. Their rotation struggled a little bit last year. But that's what they're announcing right now. David Price is on the market. So as for Marcell Ozuna, I know you mentioned him. Braves fans are very familiar with him. The Reds have been reported to be interested in Marcell Ozuna. I know the Braves would like him after he clobbered them in the NLDS last year. He hit .429 against the Braves and really catapulted the Cardinals past them in the five-game series.
Yeah, don't remind me.
Yeah. Sticking in the NL Central, Chris Bryant, the Braves, as of yesterday, have reported to be out on him. I believe that teams are a little skittish when it comes to Bryant, as they're going to wait till his grievance is settled to really determine how much time left on his deal and what his contract outlook really looks like for the time being.
Stop there for a minute. Terry, that's what I don't get, is baseball knew months ago that they had this issue, that Chris Bryant was filing the grievance. What the hell have they waited on to have the hearing? Because they're screwing him over by leaving him in limbo.
Yeah, they sure are, because, I mean, you know, if he's not able to go out there and get a deal or whatever because this is hanging over his head, that's hurting his leverage and his marketability. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but they should have had this resolved beforehand.
On top of Chris Bryant, the Rendon, sticking with third base, the Anthony Rendon deal is looking like it's the Rangers and everyone else. The Rangers have made him a top priority for their free agency class, and it looks like they're very in on him. Whether or not Rendon and the Rangers work something out will be determined probably fairly soon. We mentioned David Price earlier. He's amongst a group of about four pitchers that aren't really Strasburg or Garrett Cole caliber. He fits in with Madison Bumgarner, Dallas Keuchel, and Ryu from the Dodgers last year, who really had a breakout season. Those four pitchers will probably find new homes fairly soon. I know that they were waiting on the dominoes to fall to really see what their monetary situation would be looking like. And now that we have a little bit perspective with Zach Wheeler, who's more in their ballpark of skill set, they're really starting to figure out, along with Scott Boras, who's the agent for, I think, all three of those guys. That's really coming to fruition now, and hopefully we'll start seeing one of those dominoes fall. Once one goes, I expect the rest to really be rattled off fairly quickly after.
Okay, appreciate it. Good stuff.
George, here's another story that I just saw that just popped up, that the Rockies are willing to listen, it says, to trade offers regarding Nolan Arenado. I'm shocked at that.
God,
frankly.
Where's that one coming from?
From MLB Network.
No, I'm saying, just where is that coming from? Because they made a big to do of showing everybody that they could get him re-signed, and now they're willing to talk.
That's what it says.
Ooh, man, it would take the Colorado. It would take the Grand Canyon and a few other monuments. If I'm Colorado, to trade him.
Yeah, he's quite a player.
Terry, I want you to listen on this. Earlier today, Ryan Tannehill held a press conference, and there was a lot of different discussion that went on, but I want to play the clip. I've brought it up a couple of times. Watson has, too. His feelings about his relationship with Marcus Mariota.
How much have you appreciated that? How important has that been to you, and what, you know, could have been a difficult situation?
Yeah, Marcus is huge. Obviously, it is a difficult situation for him. Ton of respect for Marcus, and not only what he's done in his football career, but the person that he is each and every day. And like I said, tough situation for him, but he's been nothing but professional throughout the whole process. I've been supportive, been able to just talk through things on game day, you know, during the week. Helps me with watching the tape. You know, I think he does everything he can possibly do to help me and this team along, which is, you know, it says a lot about his character as a person being in that tough situation.
Terry, I want to start this with you because I believe that Marcus could have absolutely fractured that clubhouse if he had wanted to. And although I have not been his biggest fan in recent months, and as far as his playing, the professionalism he's shown is a big reason why they've been able to go ahead and make the strides that they have in the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that certainly is, you know, even when he was the starter, he would put the team first, you know. It showed through in his press conferences, you know, because he was, you know, not going to say anything inflammatory. He was not going to do anything the least bit controversial. So I'm not surprised, even though you know that deep down he has to be hurting from how the situation played out and how his time is going to end here. Even though you know he's hurting from that, you know, he's being a class act about it and certainly keeping those feelings hidden and under wraps and not trying to cause any sort of disturbance to this team.
And Watson, I know you second that because you've had to make tough decisions on quarterbacks in the past.
There isn't but one. And every year as a coach you deal with that. And nobody wants to be the backup. And it's not like tailback where you play two, three of them in a game every week or five wide receivers. Or it's just the way it is. And that's why I think the one good thing in the NC2A, letting these kids move on as quarterbacks, isn't a bad thing. Gives them opportunities. But, again, while you're still there, it's the Jalen Hurts did the same thing. He handled it perfectly. He found a place that could use his talents and would use his talents. Now, that's what Marcus has got to do. If he finds the place that will use his talents to what he does best, Marcus Mariota will be one of the better quarterbacks in this league. That's my prediction. And the way this league's headed right now, I wouldn't doubt that somebody takes him and does more of the Ravens-type things, that kind of stuff, and he sticks out. That will be my prediction. And let's give it a few years, but I'm going to bet you 2-3 years down the road at the most, he's one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL.
Let's do this, Terry. I know you've got to run. We'll see you back at 3 o'clock. In the meantime, when we come back, we're going to be joined by a guy who has dealt with a lot of this kind of stuff in the past, a good friend in Kelly Holcomb. And then I'm going to get Watson to talk a little bit about some comments that Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney made earlier today about the playoff system as we now have it in college football. From the Goggin Cold Hall Studios, you're listening to WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
Lynch Tree Service has been helping Middle Tennesseans for more than 25 years. Whether you need tree pruning and maintenance, stump grinding, or even land clearing, Lynch Tree Service is here to help. Their number one priority is to provide customers with the best tree services possible at an extremely competitive price. For more info, give them a call at 615-649-4584 or go online, lynchtreeserve@aol.com.
His favorite bourbon, her favorite bottle of wine. Magic moments begin at Brinkman's Wine and Spirits in Brentwood. Whether hosting a party or just looking for a nice bottle of wine for dinner, you can't go wrong with Brinkman's Wine and Spirits, with an impressive array of wine and spirits to choose from. How many times have you been in a supermarket, wandering up and down the wine aisle, getting more confused and frustrated by the minute? When you ask for help, they know less than you do. Tim Brinkman and the staff at Brinkman's Wine and Spirits will make you feel welcomed and appreciated. They have a passion for personal service to help you make the best selection for your specific taste and budget. The originator of local bourbon tastings, there's always opportunities to discover new spirits and wines. Looking for gift ideas? They can assist you with suggestions for all occasions. Rediscover Brinkman's Wine and Spirits, located at 7110 Town Center Way, just east of Franklin Road and the roundabout by the Brentwood Post Office. Good. Better. Brinkman's.
Penn Station likes to mix it up. Cold subs for lunch, grilled subs for dinner, wraps and salads, fresh cut fries, chocolate chunk cookies. So whether we grill, we fry, or we bake, we like to give you plenty of options. Penn Station, it's all about good taste.
Visit Penn Station East Coast Subs in Hermitage and the two locations in Murfreesboro, Memorial Boulevard, or Medical Center Parkway. This month, try the delicious chicken parmesan sub with fresh cut fries and drink at a special price. Penn Station, it's all about good taste.
Blair, what about my medical bills?
They'll all be taken care of through the settlement.
What about me?
You worry about getting better. Do what your doctor tells you. We'll take care of the rest.
What a relief.
Mark Durham, Injury Law, 615-242-9000.
Nashville Sports Radio is live and local and on the road.
Hey, folks, this is John Burton from News Channel 5 and the Greg Pogan John Burton Show. Nashville Sports Radio is on the road live from Goggin Cold Hall on Friday the 27th. We'll be doing a live show grilling and picking with the pickers. Join us live Friday the 27th starting at 9 at Goggin Cold Hall.
Live, local, and everywhere. WNSR is Nashville Sports Radio. The prodigal son of Nashville Sports Radio has returned. The George Plaster Show on Nashville Sports Radio.
I wonder how Kelly Holcomb felt when he heard that little promo. We're about to find out at 2:24. Kelly joins us by phone. What's going on, big man?
Yeah, I was about to say something about that. It's amazing that they've got the George Plaster Show up. I mean, does anybody listen?
Well, nope. You're in mid-season form, aren't you?
Gotta be with you.
Say hello to Watson. Try to be civil for a change.
I like Coach Brown. I like him.
I like Kelly too. Anybody that gives George shots, Kelly, I love him. So thank you very much.
I know he's actually. I just George and I just left. We was at a meeting, and he actually looks. He's actually dressed nice today, which is once out of the year is not bad.
Wow, fine. Watson, one of my greatest moments in underdog history, took place 2 or 3 years ago. We would do back then our underdog picks. I want to say Thursdays. At 5 o'clock, and so we were we're going through our picks, and everybody was doing their picks, and I think Kelly ended up with the last pick, and he chose a game that had started 15 minutes earlier, and I absolutely busted his butt. It was Toledo. You remember that?
I was trying to sneak one in.
Oh, I don't think you knew one way or the other.
Oh, there's no question, but I'm going to tell you right now that I was trying to sneak one in.
Well, you should be ashamed.
All I know is this, Watson, if y'all are playing that game, if you're getting beat by George, you suck.
I suck. I suck, buddy. It's not about it.
Do not. That was my, you know, last year I won it on the right, and this year I'm in second. I was holding the lead the whole year, and then Chris Sanders, the day that Vanderbilt beat Missouri, I mean, he just blew it out of the water. Killed me, killed everybody. That dude's got 64 and a half points, and I've got 37.
It's a bitter world.
Mm. Oh, it's bitter, dude. It's bitter.
So, Kelly, the real reason we brought you on was not to take rips at me. You can do that on your time, and I know you do. Are you surprised at all at the level of taking it to a next level that Ryan Tannehill has done with the Titans?
I am not. You know, he when he was at Miami, obviously he was a first-round pick. He had an injury bug there, but, you know, I've told people this. Sometimes you need a change of scenery. And, you know, you look at the quarterbacks throughout the history of the game. I mean, one of the most notable is Jim Plunkett, you know, where he got drafted by the New England Patriots, and he wasn't very good, and then he went to the Oakland Raiders, and, I mean, he's a Hall of Fame guy. He won Super Bowls there. You know, you look at, you know, the Joe Montanas of the world who left San Francisco and goes to Kansas City, although, you know, he's beloved in San Francisco. It's a little bit different situation, but, you know, he just it just didn't work out for whatever reason in Miami, and it does not surprise me. I think when you look in a locker room, George, guys, it doesn't matter who's playing as long as the guy that's in there is productive. And I don't think teammates, coaches, anybody. I mean, it doesn't matter. Guys in the locker room don't. You know, I don't care if you're a first overall pick, if you're a sixth round. Whoever's getting the job done is who they want in there. And you know, I think you look at Marcus, and I think it's an evident case that he has totally lost his confidence. You watch him play; he's just unsure of himself. When you're in the National Football League and you're a quarterback and you throw the football, you have to throw things on time. In college, you know, I tell kids this all the time. In high school, the windows are really big. In college, they get a little bit narrower. And then when you go to the National Football League, they get really closed, and there's only a small window to throw it in where a guy is open. And, you know, I think he's gotten to the point – Marcus had gotten to the point where, you know, he's trying to watch a guy get open instead of throwing him open. And I just – it doesn't work in the National Football League, and I just think he lost his confidence. And you got to give Mike Vrabel credit. You know, those guys want to win football games. That's what they're there for. So I think Ryan has come in and done a fabulous job. I mean, and just like Ryan Clark said on ESPN this morning, you know, when the ball got batted up and that defensive lineman for the Oakland Raiders picks it off and he goes and tackles, and that's who guys follow. Guys follow guys like that. Linemen follow guys that are in it with you, you know, and all he's doing is winning ball games. And I think it's pretty refreshing. And you look at Ryan and hey, things didn't work out in Miami, but they're working out here. Hopefully he keeps that going.
Tell people a little bit about what it's really like in your career. For a long time, you were a backup, but there were times where you would end up becoming the starter and you'd produce, or you'd come in on a moment's notice, not knowing you're going to play, but somebody gets hurt. Kelly, how in the world does a backup make it work when in practice they're not getting a lot of reps?
No, they're not getting, there were times where when I went to Indianapolis, first time I went to Indianapolis and I was with Lindy and Fonnie and Jim Harbaugh was the quarterback. You know, Jim would take three snaps, and then myself or Paul Justin, whoever was backing up, we would take a snap. So you got some reps during practice. But then, you know, when Peyton got drafted, he was number one overall, and he was a rookie, you know, and then I stayed with him for 3 years. I never got a snap in practice. Only thing I did was scout team stuff. So it's really hard when you are a backup because you never know when your number is going to be called. You got to be ready. And there were times – I can remember I tell people this story all the time. We were playing the Minnesota Vikings, and we were 3-12, and I was already back in Tennessee. I couldn't wait to get back home, you know. And then Paul Justin got hurt. I was backing up Jim for the last three or four games, and Jim ended up getting hurt in that game, and I had the worst game of my career. But you have to be ready. And, you know, the guy that was doing the announcing of the game was Jim Moore, and then he became the coach of the Colts. And, you know, my first meeting with him was, hey, I saw you in Minnesota a couple months ago, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, I got a good chance of making this team. But, you know, you never know when your number is going to be called, and you've got to be prepared. You've got to watch film. You've got to stay after and work. You know, sometimes guys, and I would do this some. I didn't do it a great deal. I wish I would have done it more, but – you know, if you get a guy that's on the practice squad or something, you take the script and you go through the script after practice. I mean, you got to get the films after practice. But, you know, if you could take 15, 20, 30 minutes to go through the script with a guy, just as long as you know that you're prepared. But it's a tough gig being a guy because, you know, nobody cares. Once the starter goes down, they want you to come in and produce. And that's tough for some guys, and some guys aren't prepared.
Kelly, I don't want you to name names, but in all those years you were in the league, were you ever in a situation where one quarterback was sort of backbiting and becoming the cancer?
I can't say it was quarterbacks. I've been around other positions. I can't really say it was quarterbacks. I was never in a situation like that. I was in a tough situation when I was in Cleveland, and you know, Tim Katz and myself are really good friends, and we had a battle, and everybody thought that we disliked each other, but we always kept it professional, and we're still friends to this day. I think people tried to pit us against each other in the media, but it was never that case. But now there are some guys, you know, that can become that, absolutely, and it's not a good deal, and you see it happening, and you know, you just hope that a coach, being the head coach, sees it, and, you know, rectifies it and takes care of it, because if he doesn't, it'll definitely divide the locker room. I don't know if there was ever a quarterback. I can remember some, you know, there's guys off the top of my head now that were cancers, you know, at other positions. But in the quarterback room, you know, everywhere I was, it was pretty cool.
Watson, do you have any questions for your newest best friend, Kelly Holcomb?
Kelly, I had many quarterbacks go into the league, and I would always ask them, and I'd say, what was the major surprise differences to you? And some of them, to a T, I'll give you a couple, and I want to hear what you say. They would say verbiage, the language of calling plays was a major difference, and that might have been on me because we were pretty simple in verbiage. And then they would say the windows to throw in and the timing, what they call an open guy. You hit on a little bit of that just a second ago. What were the differences for you, and how did you work to make those adjustments?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, with some of that, the verbiage is a lot. You know, and that's one thing that I did not, you know, you tell everybody what to do. I mean, it's like, can they get in their playbook and study it? I remember coming out of the huddle, and I was with the Bills, and the running back literally every time would ask me what I got. And then one time I just exploded on him. I said, you've got to get in your playbook, dude. I'm thinking about 1,000 things in my head, and you're sitting here asking me about what you got every play. I said, you got to get in your book. But the verbiage is pretty tough. It's because they tell everybody what to do. I mean, if you listen to John Gruden, some of those things of the West Coast deal, I mean, they'll go X, Y, Z and tell the T and the, you know, the H guy what to do. So it's just, it can get rather wordy. And that was the problem that I had coming to high school football, because, you know, you just think that everybody's, you know, up to your speed, and they're not. And I've had to obviously, you know, turnkey on that deal, and, you know, had to, you know, back way off of some of the verbiage that I had, make it really, really simple. And, you know, just those, my whole deal was when I came from Lincoln County and I went to MTSU, and MTSU was a 1AA program at that time. But I can remember, you know, my first scrimmage, I can remember talking about the speed of the game. And then once you go to the pros from college, the speed of the game is just so much different. People just do not understand that the speed, defensive line wise, offensive line wise, those guys are athletic. The DBs, everybody on that field can run. And that was really the big thing that got me, you know, even if you come from a UT or if you come from an Alabama, those guys in the National Football League are still really fast. And I use this example. I can remember when I was with the Colts, and I ended up playing for the Bills, but we played the Bills up in Buffalo when I was with the Colts, and Bruce Smith was on the line, and that was the fastest. To be as big as he was, that's the fastest guy I'd ever seen off a defensive end, because he had such a quick first step and he could get to the quarterback. And it's just amazing the speed that those guys have, being that big. And I also tell people this, when I was in Cleveland, you know, a long time ago, LeVar Arrington and Courtney Brown. Courtney Brown was the first pick for the Cleveland Browns, and the next year I went to the Browns. But Courtney Brown was a defensive lineman. He was a defensive tackle. And that guy was 6'5", and he was probably 270 and runs a 4.5 40. So, you know, those guys are just freakish in nature. And when I took off running, I mean, everybody says, well, you weren't a runner. I was like, you dang them right, I wasn't a runner. If I didn't have anybody open, I'm throwing the ball away, because those defensive linemen can outrun me. You know, so the speed of the game was really the thing that got me when I first went to the National Football League.
Yep. And in that, how did you get adjusted? Just through time, reps, just getting used to the speed? The other thing that my guys would say, Kelly, would be length. The length of everybody, the length of the DBs, the length of the defensive linemen, having openings to throw into. You're always said in college we'd get to sit there and throw in rhythm. In the pros, that's harder to do. You're always sliding for a spot to see in the pocket.
Yeah, that has something to do with it. I mean, people always ask you that, and they ask you, like, well, like, how does Doug Flutie see? And I say, well, you know, if there's a guy, I mean, I'm 6'3", and if there's a guy that's 6'7", I had a couple of guys that were 6'7" as my tackles. I mean, you literally can't see over those guys, so you're just looking through holes. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. You're looking through gaps in the defense. You know, and another thing, and we've talked about it, I talked about it, you just talked about it, but when a guy is open in college, it's a little bit the guy's further apart. But when they're open in the National Football League, it's a very narrow window, and that's, you know, that's the thing that I still have trouble with high school quarterbacks. You know, I tell them, you know, who's a curl flat defender? Well, if he's running with your flat route, I mean, they want him to be wide open, and then when he's right on top of him, I'm like, he's still open, and high school kids just cannot see that. They do not understand that if a guy's in front, and I'm you know, sometimes they'll be 2 yards in front of him, and that's really open in the National Football League. A lot of times they're right on him when you throw that flat route. But that's just so aggravating to me because they think that if they're 2 yards away, they're still covered. And I'm like, guys, that's not covered. Just throw it to him. There's nobody else out there, you know, to cover him. And it's, you know, those windows. And that's what I think Marcus Mariota's really had a problem with. I mean, he's wanting to – it's kind of the Tim Tebow effect. Tim Tebow would wait till guys, like, they would run a 12-yard hook and come back. Well, he wanted to see them come back to him to make sure they're open instead of when he hits the top of that route, throw that ball, and the defense does not have time to react. That's just it's a whole different deal with the speed, with windows as a quarterback throwing the football. So, you know, that takes some time to get adjusted to when you're there. But then, you know, if you make it and you stay, then that stuff just becomes second nature to you.
Yep.
Kelly?
George?
I guess this is where we tell you to get lost.
Absolutely. Do the Michael Jackson and beat it. I'll get lost.
Hey, thank you for doing this. I do appreciate it.
Guys, I appreciate it. Anytime. Talk.
Thanks, Kel.
Kelly Holcomb. Watson, for whatever reason, he and I did not know each other when he was in college. I don't think I ever dealt with him at all, but I'll never forget the first time I had him on the air. He started busting on me within two and a half minutes. It didn't take any time for us to feel like we'd known each other for 30 years. And since then, it has been game on. Cheap shots back and forth. He's a piece of work.
He's a good guy.
He is a good guy.
Good guy.
Hey, when we come back, Watson, I want to lay out some things that have gotten out today. Jim Delaney, Big Ten commissioner, talking about possible expansion of the college football playoff system. So stick around from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios. You're listening to WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
Hello, I'm Tom Hodges of Goggin Cold Hall, a regional refrigerated company that operates within a 500-mile radius of our home in Smyrna, Tennessee. We're seeking professional drivers to join our family-owned business. Our number one priority of serving our customers is by taking care of our employees first. With a $1,000 sign-on bonus plus a driver referral program, Goggin Cold Hall offers an excellent benefit package with a 401k retirement plan, paid vacations and holidays, insurance options, and a competitive pay structure that includes weekly, monthly, and quarterly bonuses. No Northeast travel, no touch freight, and with our late model Freightliner and Kenworth equipment, we promise to treat you in a first-class manner. If you're interested in joining our family at Goggin Cold Hall, please visit www.goggincold.com. That's www.goggincold.com or call us at 931-225-3873. That's Goggin Cold Hall, the coldest team in town.
Were you scammed into signing a timeshare contract? And did you miss the part that said you have to pay for your great idea? Not only for the rest of your life, but when you're not here anymore, you get to pass this turkey onto your family for them to pay for the rest of their lives. Thanks, Dad. Don't burden your family down the road, and don't be stuck with expensive timeshare payments forever. Get out of your bad idea timeshare contract guaranteed or pay nothing. Call Resort Release today and learn for free how their timeshare exit team can help you legally exit your timeshare contract. They've helped thousands of people, and they're A-plus rated with a BBB. So if you feel scammed, get mad, and get out of your expensive timeshare contract right now, guaranteed. Call N-O-W.
800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. That's 800-898-0816.
I want you to listen really close to a message from the folks at ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kalutis. Your credit reports are your financial report card. A good credit report is necessary to get a mortgage, car loan, and credit cards. Even getting rental housing insurance or a job is dependent on your credit report. Here's what blows me away. 40 million consumers have an error on their credit report, and 2 million of those are so serious they're likely being overcharged for mortgages, credit card debts, auto loans, insurance policies, and other financial obligations. If you want to know more about your credit report, I want you to contact Bill Kalutis at ShieldLawGroup.com or call Bill at 615-742-8020. ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kalutis.
In a world of corporate giants, it's nice to know there's a locally owned full-service pharmacy here to take care of you and your entire family. Harding Pharmacy is dedicated to meeting their customers' needs with the highest level of service. Have your prescriptions transferred or your next one filled at Harding Pharmacy, where they also offer free delivery. Harding Pharmacy, your fast and friendly family pharmacy, is easy to find at 4120 Nolensville Pike, just south of Harding Place, next to the post office.
The man, the myth, the legend, the Plaz. The George Plaster Show on WNSR Nashville Sports Radio.
2:43 and here we go as we talk a little college football playoff stuff, which everybody is interested in because, let's face it, we've spent a whole season getting to this. Watson, let me just ask up front, are you a fan of four teams or do you want more?
George, I think I'm ready for more, to tell you the truth. I've been a fan of four teams, but the last couple of the years here watching it and seeing the ones that are close, now I still think there's two, maybe three teams that are just better than everybody else every year. But I do think that it's getting time to look at that, and I've had thoughts about that for years, about the playoff. I was in them in the FCS, so I kind of know how that stuff works. But I'm getting interested now to possibly expand it, I think.
Okay, I'm going to get to that in just a second. What came out today, if the current format were eight teams instead of four, your matchups, we believe, based on the way the committee graded out these people, the 1-8 would be LSU, Wisconsin. The 2-7 would be Ohio State, Baylor. Clemson and Georgia, two old rivals who don't like each other, who recruit, let me take that back. 3-6 would be Clemson, Oregon, and 4-5 would be Oklahoma, Georgia. So just kind of hold on to that for a minute as I read you a little bit of this story. Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney, former Green Hills Y basketball star, good guy, told The Athletic today that his conference is open to conversation about potential expansion from the current four-team format. Quote, "The Big Ten would be happy to discuss structure issues with colleagues. It's probably a good idea, given all of the conversations and noise around the issue, to have discussions with our colleagues. The Big Ten would definitely have conversations." End of quote. This joins now, most recently, Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby expressing a lot of the same thoughts. Watson, to me, what may be starting to happen, you've got two leagues that are pretty powerful saying maybe we need to discuss more. You know full well the Memphises and the Boise States are sitting there going, who's kidding each other? We're not even eligible. That's why I think we're going to get moved in that direction. Is about 75 of the schools don't feel like they're even eligible.
Well, and that'd be true, but I would think that the the one spot might be given to the group of five, like we get with it, where they get the Cotton Bowl this year. They might give them one spot of the eight. That would be a possibility. Since you're expanding it, that they might do that. I don't know. They've got a solid grief there, to say the least, George. And the last thing the decisions are made on is those group of five schools. On any decision they're making in college football, that's. I've been in those meetings. I was in those BCS meetings as a member representing the group of five when I was the AD at UAB. I know how that works. And to say the least, there's not decisions made for the group of five.
Okay, let me try this one on you. One of the big gripes right now that we have, and I see it, I texted a buddy of mine who's a Clemson fan and said, "Are you going out there?" And his answer was, "Nope, I'm saving my money for New Orleans." And so you've got fan bases that sit there and say, "Look, I can't afford, first of all, from vacation to cost of getting out there, cost of tickets, which has become astronomical." So that right now, that's the biggest argument that people have against an 8 or even a 16-team playoff, is just that you water down the fan base where they can't travel that many weeks.
Very, very true. There is, you could try to do the games like they do the NC2A. In those early games, sometimes the better teams are sent somewhere close to where you can travel. I mean, Georgia, NC2A basketball deals with that right now. I mean, you have your first round, then you get to the Sweet 16, then you go to the Final Four. They're doing it. And it sure hadn't hurt the crowds in those places. I think it can be worked out. And,
yeah, but whoa, hold on a second, Watson. In fairness, there's a big difference between filling a 17,000-seat basketball arena and a 60,000-seat football stadium.
Well, not in comparison. You think you have great fan support in basketball at your home place, and you have 12,000 or 10,000 or 8,000 at a game, and then your football is sold out with 80 and 90,000 a game, you're going to get the percentages of that 80 and 90 like you're going to get the percentages of that 10 or 12. So I don't totally agree with that. And I'm not sure there isn't fans that'll say, "Okay, I'm going to the first one I can't afford. I'm going to pick one." And they might get, because it'd be three games. You're playing two now. You're talking about one more game, right? That's what you're basically talking about here. You're going to play one more game than they're playing right now.
Okay, let me ask that question. Because the current, and I'm reading this, the current college football playoff is just 4 years into a 12-year contract with ESPN. But Delaney and the Big 12 commissioner, Bowlesby, want conversation about departing from the format earlier than its current 2026 ending and expanding the field. And I would think ESPN would be all for that because they'd like to water this thing down and get more weeks of it. So let me ask you this. In your mind, are we talking an 8-team playoff or a 16?
I don't see 16. I think that's just... That's basically where you are in the FCS, and I don't see that. I'm a strong believer, and I've said this for years, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, even on the air, and I have two pet peeves. One of them is that why wouldn't we go to 8 and everybody play this FCS no game one a year? That's just a waste. Why wouldn't we go to 11 games and then expand the playoffs a little bit? And we already get half the schools are going to bowls now. And cut it back a week and give the kids a little more time in between, an open date, whatever, stuck in there with it, and then do that. I'm not for 6 because then somebody's going to get to not play. And I think once you start, you start. And somebody shouldn't get an off week and waiting on somebody that, and that's the way the FCS does it right now, George. And I don't like that. I think Austin Peay was the only one to upset one of those this past week. Everybody that had the open didn't play the week before won the game. So I'm stuck on eight. I don't think I would be at all for going past that. It's too physical, and it ended up being too many games on the kids.
Okay, let me try this one on you. If you did go to eight, would you have your first weekend where the top four host a game?
That's the one thing that could very strongly be discussed. And then you don't even, you're not even messing with the sites. You're going to end up with the same number of sites that you got right now. If you hosted the first game and then you knock it down to four, basically, right? That would knock it to four, and now you're right where you are today. And so if there is this problem with selling tickets that they think, I would work more like, okay, let's have two in the South and match that by the teams. And that's harder to do, I understand, because of seeding. And so if you've got Clemson playing Minnesota, that one's hard to match. But if you've got Clemson playing Georgia, you possibly said, that one's going to be sold out on the spot as long as you've got those two teams playing at a site fairly close to each other, quote, Atlanta. You know, so that's kind of the way I would look at it. But I'm ready to go to eight. I'd also be for going back to 11 and not playing the 12th game, because everybody's 12th game is an FCS opponent.
But you know that's never going to happen.
I don't think so, but I don't know. There's going to be a lot of things they've got to discuss when they get into expanding the playoffs. And the one that I always heard in all these meetings, which you won't believe because you think it would be all around dollars, we got to be careful for the kids and not trying to make them play too many games. And yet in high school, every state, these high schools are playing four, some five games to win a state championship extra when the season ends. Now, they're only playing 10 games in the regular season, where college football, FBS football, not FCS football, FBS football is 12 games. FCS football, see, is still, other than on some of these leap year type things, they're still 11 games.
Well, let me ask you this, Watson. When that conversation would come up about all this class time, did anybody say, well, why is nobody worried about it on the 1AA level?
No. It didn't. But it wasn't class as much as it was physicality. That's what it was. It wasn't missing class as much. It's because, honestly, George, football misses class less than any sport. Baseball misses a ton. Basketball misses more class. I mean, all it's more class than football because they're just playing once a week and not leaving till Fridays to play a Saturday game. They're all flying, or it's close enough to take a bus, and they're leaving on Friday and trying to catch as many classes before they even leave. A lot of times these schools now are not even getting to the hotels where they're staying till supper time, you know. So it's really, football is not as got the issues that class that baseball does. Not even close.
So, okay, let's try to crystal ball this a little bit. So Bowlesby has come out and been pretty open. Now Delaney has come out and been pretty open. Why do you think they're talking when in the past they've always been pretty party line, go with whatever the majority has ruled? We're not going to have this dissension in this talk. Why do you think they're talking?
Because I think that all of the schools, fans are saying we're being left out. We're not getting in. We're not getting enough of our teams that deserve a chance to go into this Final Four or whatever it is. That's what I think it is, and I think that's 100% what it is. I think the Wisconsin and Minnesota fans right now saying, man, we deserved a shot. Oregon or Utah saying, we deserved a shot. Baylor is down there for sure saying, we deserved a shot. Georgia saying, we deserved a shot. Alabama, dang sure saying we deserved a shot. So I think there's – now when you're getting left out and there's so few getting taken, only four, and we're even leaving Power 5 conferences out of that every year. You have to. You've got five of them. So, I mean, you can't hit everybody. So that's what I think's going down, George.
Okay, so let me try this one on you. Whatever thing we're thinking about going to, whether it's 8 or 16, will we get there, and do you think the 16 can compete with the 1, the 2 can compete with the 15, or do we get to a point where people say, whoa, we went too far, we really had a good thing, and we didn't know how to stop and enjoy what we had?
Yeah, I don't see it ever, long past you and I are gone, ever getting to 16. I don't think it'll ever go to where now the FCS is even more than that. I don't see that. I don't think it'll ever do that. I think you're looking at 8, and I just bet you it never goes past 8. Just the physicality of football compared to basketball and baseball, George, is so different. And you just can't keep throwing those kids out there over and over and over and them not getting injured and the backup's not near as good. Now you get in the 16 things and you're playing midways and you're trying to get to the semifinals and heck, half your football team are backups now. I just don't see it ever going to 16. Really don't. And being in all these conversations from way back now, I was in these conversations back when we – before we even had the Final Four here. Just the BCS alone, and I just don't ever see it get going that far.
I'll read this because this is some other conversation that has come out of this. This is Northwestern's athletic director Jim Phillips saying, "What I would like to see is anything we can do to take it out of the boardroom and put it more back on the field and have the student athletes decide it. That is a nice thought. That ain't ever going to happen. Hour number one.
Football.
Yeah. Hour number one is done. We'll head down to Houston and get a little Texans perspective to start the 3 o'clock hour. You're listening to WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.